Welcome back to Good Food. In preparation for my conversation with Marion Nessel, I looked at the many, many past conversations we've had over the years. I tried to count them, but stopped at 10. We've talked about everything from nutrition labels to pet food. She's a rarity, an academic whose work on issues of diet, nutrition, and public policy is immensely engaging. Her books reveal truths about the way we eat and how it is linked to the politics and economics of our nation and the world. Now, with her memoir, Slow Cooked, Marion gets personal and shares what it was like to come of age during a very different time, when women's roles and expectations were quite different than they are today. Hi, Marion.
Hi, Evan. It's so nice to hear your voice.
Yeah, I'm just so thrilled to have you back, and that it is on the occasion of the publication of your memoir. You know, it's so interesting to me that as you moved from one scientific discipline to another during your studies and postdoctoral work, you ended up with this career writing about the politics of food, which clearly reflects the values with which you grew up. Could you talk a little about your parents and their beliefs and the milieu in which you grew up?
Oh, absolutely. My parents were members of the Communist Party, kind of low-level members who, you know, they weren't leaders or, you know, people who were fighting a revolution in any real sense. And I liked the values that went with that. I liked the idea of equality, of fairness, of everybody having a shot at education and everybody having a shot at a life that was fulfilling in some way. All of that made a lot of sense to me. What didn't make sense was their rationalization for what was going on in the Soviet Union at the time. And we had a lot of fights about it when I was growing up. But the values stuck. They made sense to me. They still make sense to me. I still think they were worth whatever it took. And for my parents, it was their social life. Lots and lots of people belonged to the Communist Party at the time. It was very dangerous for a lot of people. My parents, not so much, because they weren't leaders, so they weren't persecuted and weren't jailed and didn't lose their jobs or any of those kinds of things, but lots of their friends did.
So let's kind of fast forward to when you start college, which is you end up going to UC Berkeley. Can you paint a picture of what Berkeley and the campus was like then? And then tell us what your area of study was.
Sure. I lived in Los Angeles. I went to high school, junior high and high school in Los Angeles, and Berkeley was as far away from home as I could get. And I went there originally as a dietetics major because I didn't know what to study, but my mother had a friend who collected cookbooks, and she said, oh, you like food? You should go study food. The two options were agriculture, but I was a city girl. I didn't get agriculture at that time. And so I was a dietetics major, but I didn't last long because it was much too much like home economics. And we were required to take a 5-credit chemistry course with a laboratory. And I thought, well, if I'm going to be in that and I'm going to be taking science with science majors, I might as well be a science major. So I ended up as a science major.
What was your nutrition epiphany?
Well, the nutrition epiphany came because I was given a class to teach. I was handed at Brandeis. I'd been teaching cell and molecular biology, and my department had a rule that you could only teach the same class 3 semesters in a row because they didn't want people to get stale. And that at the end of that 3 years, you had to teach whatever the department needed, whether you knew anything about it or not. And it was my turn to switch. Students were asking for human biology classes. I was given a choice of human physiology or human nutrition. I was already interested in nutrition. Remember, I used to be interested in food. And so I picked nutrition and got completely fascinated right away. I thought it was the best way to teach undergraduate biology that anybody could ever imagine. You could teach critical thinking in biology through nutrition in a way that you could not do through cell and molecular biology, because the students could read the papers, the students could evaluate the papers, And the students were really interested because they eat like everybody else.
And then was there a food politics epiphany, or was that the drumbeat all along?
Well, it was there quietly all along. In the first class that I taught in nutrition at Brandeis, I used a book published by Center for Science in the Public Interest called Food for People, Not for Profit, that had short essays that could have been written yesterday, because the issues haven't changed, really. And these were issues about food industry marketing. They were issues about politics of food. It was there right from the beginning, but quietly. And I didn't really catch on that this was something that needed focused attention until the 1990s, early 1990s, when I was already at NYU. And I went to a meeting at the National Cancer Institute on cigarette smoking and cancer, and heard talks from physicians and scientists who were anti-smoking advocates, and really important ones, showing slides of cigarette marketing all over the world, and in particular showing slides of cigarette marketing to children. And I was astounded by these presentations, not because I didn't know that cigarette companies were marketing and marketing to children. I certainly knew that, but I had never paid attention to it. And these were focused presentations, slide after slide after slide, of examples of this kind of marketing. And I walked out of that lecture hall thinking, we should be doing this for Coca-Cola. We should be doing exactly for food industry marketing what has been done for cigarette marketing. And so I started paying attention.
Could you do me a favor and give a virtual pitch to a young person who is interested in food beyond enjoying dining and wants to center it in study, but maybe they're around people who think that idea is ridiculous?
Well, I think food is one of the most important commodities in the world. It's a business that is worth trillions of dollars. Billions of people don't have enough food to eat. Billions more are eating too much of the wrong kind of food and are overweight and at risk for chronic disease and these days COVID. And our food production system has an enormous influence on climate change. And if you go to school and study about this, you will be in a position to change these things for the better.
Thank you so much, Marian.
Oh, thanks, Evan. I just love talking to you. Much appreciated.
Marian Nessel is the Paulette Goddard Professor of Nutrition, Food Studies, and Public Health Emerita at New York University, and an author of a wide range of books about the politics of food, nutrition, health, and the environment. Her memoir is Slow Cooked: An Unexpected Life in Food Politics.